Hi, good afternoon, everyone. I thank you all for staying for the very last session. All the panelists were so excited to be in the very last day at the very last moment. But so we know you're the diehards are here right now. I'm going to talk about some research I did actually back when I was in graduate school at Tulane on volatile organic air pollution in the Baton Rouge, New Orleans industrial corridor. I should start with the disclosure. I guess when I was thinking about this, I'm a state employee. I work for the state of Louisiana, and the state of Louisiana is dependent upon the oil and gas industry for a lot of their income. So I suppose, I don't know. We're all in that. That's one of the problems in Louisiana. And then with the regulators as well, like the DEQ, as Anna was pointing out, they don't charge very much for their permits. But when you have the regulators depending upon fee income from the industry that they regulate, it does create a potential problem there in terms of. As you've heard from a very nice description by Anna's. On this presentation, Louisiana is one of the most most dense areas of petrochemical production in the United States. I created this metric. The data on this is not current as of the most last couple of years, but I tried to look at how many barrels per. This is just petrochemical, not all chemical industry, but petrochemical. And this is comparing. New Jersey and Louisiana have the highest density in terms of. How many barrels per day per 1,000 square miles. And this area, there's 11 parish regions in Louisiana, we call them parishes instead of counties, between Baton Rouge and New Orleans, has been labeled Cancer Alley in the past. And the reason for that was that Louisiana had consistently recorded high cancer mortality rates over time. And the incidence rates for major forms of cancer, other than lung, however, are lower than the U.S. average. But African-American males and white males have elevated lung cancer incidence in this area. So there's a little bit of both sides of it, like some maybe good news and some bad news. And there's been a lot of attention paid to this. I mean, thanks in large part to groups like the Bucket Brigade, but even national attention. These are three recent publications put out by the MIT Press. Uneasy Alchemy, this book on the left by Barbara Allen, kind of just talks about the whole relationship between the industry and the state. And then the next two books, the one on the far right is a book that describes the struggle for environmental justice just in Louisiana's chemical corridor. And then this book by the same author, this recently came out as well, talks about similar fence line community problems across the country. Back to the study that I did, we framed up with two hypotheses. One is that we just wanted to go out and measure, systematically, the populations in fence line communities, are they exposed by inhalation to significantly higher concentrations of known or suspected lung and other carcinogens than similar non-fence line communities? And then secondly, there hasn't been a lot of research, long-term research studies that examine long-term health effects in communities. One of the reasons that these are very expensive and collecting, taking air samples are very expensive. I think Anna said it's $500 to analyze one sample, right? So think about that. If you do your power calculations for statistical significance for doing these kind of studies, and then the numbers can jump up really quickly. So one way of getting around that in a way is if you're looking at long-term health effects, then you don't necessarily need to know the short-term variability of the air pollutants because you're interested in long-term exposure. So if you can take kind of like composite samples, a way of thinking about it. So if you're sampling water in a river and you wanted to know the average pollution in the river over a week, well, you could collect every hour, take a little water, and then put it all together and again mix it all together and then only analyze that sample once for economy. Now, you lose information on variability in that approach, but you gain it's very cost efficient. So the way to do that with an air sample is to take an air sample over a longer period of time. There's two primary ways of collecting air samples. One is like with the bucket brigade method, where you have a Tedlar bag, or with the Summa canisters, where you actually just, if you ask somebody how you take an air sample, say, well, take a jar and put some air in it, and squirt it tight. That's kind of like how that is. The other way of taking an air sample for volatile organic compounds is to adsorb the chemicals on some sort of a media. In the case for volatile organic compounds, you usually use activated charcoal. And there are passive sampling badges that are used for occupational exposure monitoring for worker health protection programs. And what we want, and those are generally designed for short-term, higher-level concentrations of pollution than you would find maybe in an ambient air in an environment, even next to a refinery. So we were trying to validate the use of this type of sampling technique to see if it could be used, for example, up to like a seven-day period. So you could take one sample over 7 days, go back after 7 days, do another, another. So then, so you could characterize an entire years of exposure with about, 52 samples. The sites we selected, we had to define, first of all, what is a fence line community? I mean, I think we all kind of know from the pictures, you see what it is, but you have to, you have to operationalize it. And so we decided it's community located within a 2 mile radius of significant petrochemical industry activity. And then our control site was defined as a community with no significant petrochemical activity within a 5 mile radius. And we also tried to match demographics. And I forgot your name again?
Sonia,
thank you. As Sonia pointed out, most of these fence line communities have very high proportion of African Americans. In Louisiana, that's the primary minority community is African Americans. So to try to find communities with similar proportions of African Americans not next to petrochemical, that was really hard. there's not a lot in this area. And so we ended up going going outside this community of Maringouin, then we actually used the community of Walker, Louisiana. But this area around the river here, that's where the petrochemical refineries are located. And the refinery that we ended up choosing for our study site was there's an aerial photograph shown here, and this is my pictures aren't as pretty as some of the other ones. This is kind of like what you say, the definition of a fence line community. This is this is the rail line right here and the river that's here. That's why the plants are all along. They need the infrastructure of the rail lines and of the river. And then you can see the way the land is partitioned in Louisiana. These I believe are called, I don't know if I pronounce it right, arpents or arpont. And the idea is to give each plantation would have like access to the river. And so they tend to be long, narrow strips of land, and then this refinery actually, and if I'm not mistaken, this refinery is the last, or it's the newest refinery in the United States, in terms of being built. Like, so they found like they bought a piece of land and built a refinery. This is it was built in the 70s. So, and they recently have undergone an expansion. According to some of the data that ON has put together, this is one of the better run refineries, if you will, in Louisiana, the Marathon refinery. And they've recently undergone an expansion. I forget where they rank now in the hierarchy. They're still smaller than Exxon,
they're
but maybe.
They're trying to be the fourth. Yeah.
They're trying to be the fourth, is it? Okay.
Oh,
they are number four now. Okay. So it's mind-boggling like they do. I think it's maybe 400,000 barrels a day or something like that. It's a huge operation. This is a picture of me some years ago. Actually setting up some monitoring equipment. And then this is, let me back up, I'll show you right where that was. This is, there was actually an old church back here in across the railroad tracks, and I was on some church property there setting up some monitoring equipment. And when you hear people talk about the location of these industrial facilities, sometimes you hear them say, well, poor people live by the refinery because, land's cheap and it's cheap to live there. And well, yeah, maybe that could be true. But in this case, this community, the church back here, there's a cemetery back there, and I didn't do an in-depth study of the cemetery. I was invited to go back by some church members. The gravestones were from 1800s, whatever. So this community was there, like 100 years before the refinery. The specific compounds we chose to measure were we used two kind of frames to decide what they would be. One was some previous testing that the DEQ did in that area due to community complaints. And then the second one is because the overall context, this was kind of part of a larger study of looking at lung cancer in this part of Louisiana, and we wanted to choose compounds that were associated, that were known to be elevated in that community and that were potentially associated with lung cancer. So you've got BTEX, your classic compounds associated with petrochemical production, and then on down the rest of the line. And I designed a sampling station that I used and this is a schematic of it, but let me just keep going. I don't want to run out of time. So the different sampling techniques we used were the passive badge, which is like a little badge about the size of like a half dollar. You've maybe seen this before. The more traditional pump sorbent tube, where you draw air, measured amount of air through a tube. The passive badge, it's a theoretical sampling rate that's laboratory determined by the manufacturer. There's two primary ones, 3M manufactures one, and apparently you can't buy one if you want to right now because of they're using them so much for worker monitoring with the BP oil spill. I think they've already taken 21,000 samples for that. And then the other one is from another company, SKC. It's the same. We used one from SKC, but it's the same. They work the same way. And then we did do some limited sampling with Summa cancers that I'll get into. The passive, unfortunately, the passive sampling, it didn't work for this environment. And we don't know exactly the reason why. It's Louisiana. I mean, part of the sampling was done was relatively a warm time of year. When you sample this with this technique, you know, the chemicals is adsorbed and they can be desorbed as well from there. So there could have been some of that. But fortunately, we also were anticipated maybe some problems with it because it was not, these passive badges aren't designed to be used in this way for long-term low level. So we used some more traditional sampling set. So pretty quickly figured out, okay, unfortunately, the passive sampling isn't going to work. This slide shows the frequency of detection of analytes in the area. So, you know, the BTEX compounds, benzene, toluene, ethylbenzene, and xylene, were detected in 80% or more of the samples, and then on down the way, and we did not detect 1,2-dichloromethane. And then this is a box and whisker plot. If you're not familiar with this, it's a way of displaying data to show you the variability in the data. The mean is the dark. The mean is the. Am I getting it right? I'm sorry. The mean is the dotted line. Excuse me. The median is here. So if it was a normal distribution, you'd expect those lines to be in the same place. But it's very characteristic of environmental data that you have a wide variability in that. So this, so we had the 1,1,2 trichloroethane pretty tight there, but toluene and xylene at pretty wide ranges. So the community of Walker, Louisiana, which was, it was a control site in the sense that it wasn't near a petrochemical refinery, but they were near a landfill that they were concerned about. So the samples there, though, the concentration limits were all below our detection limit. But then because of that, we went ahead and did some canister sampling, some more sensitive technique, and can detect compounds at a lower concentration. This is plotted on the log scale here. And you can see, but at our the study site of Lyons, Louisiana, and the control site, the samples for the selected analytes were all consistently higher at the study site as compared to the control site. Let me, you know, I'm not going to, I'll talk about the results of these, but I don't have enough time to get into too specific detail. But in conclusion, the concentrations of ambient volatile organic compounds at the fence line community were higher than the control site, except for 1,2-dichloroethane. And then we also modeled cancer risk. And those were within what's generally considered to be acceptable levels at the control site, but approached levels of concern in the fence line community. Chloroform had the highest degree of correlation with that model in both the total cancer risk model and then a model that looked at the most, the carcinogens with their highest degree of confidence in their ability to cause cancer in humans, EPA class A and B in each site. And the non-cancer risk estimates at the control site were all within what are considered to be acceptable ranges. The model non-cancer risk estimates for children at the study site present potential levels of concern. And Children, especially for air pollution, if I filled this room with pollution, you had on this side, we had kindergartners and adults on this side. Because of the way that children, they breathe more air per unit body weight than adults. So actually, even in that, everybody's exposed to the same concentration of pollution, but the actual dose, your exposure dose in children is higher. So children are always a very sensitive population when you're dealing with air pollution, and in particular with refineries. And I'd just like to acknowledge who paid for this work. The research funding was from the EPA, and we worked, although now I work at LSU, at the time I didn't. So I worked with LSU and the Louisiana Office of Public Health and the Tulane CDC Environmental Diseases Prevention Research Center, which no longer exists anymore, but I worked with that group. So thank you, everyone.